everything out closer to the people.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble.
An oppressed person will fight back.
2-4 Basics.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
You're listening to Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. As you should have already guessed, this is going to be a special show. The full hour, we're going to be covering the G20 G8 summits that took place in Toronto. More specifically, we're going to be looking at the demonstrations that took place and, of course, the violence that took place on the streets of Toronto. We're not talking about the supposed violence that was enacted by the demonstrators, the non-existent violence that was enacted by the demonstrators. We're going to be talking about the violence of the Toronto Police Force and RCMP, the 19,000-strong security force that was that was present throughout the weekend in downtown Toronto. There are currently 900 people that have been arrested in connection with the G20 organizing, around 500 of which continue to languish in a downtown detention center. We're going to be having on Basics correspondents, a number of Basics correspondents who are going to be talking about the police response to the demonstration. We're going to be talking to people about the G20 summit itself and what policies have been adopted by these 20 imperialist and imperialist lackeys. We're going to be talking to Progress, who's a local artist, who's going to be coming on to share an anti-G20 track and also talk about his experiences from this weekend of organizing. Stay tuned. Full coverage of the G20 protest, of course, combating a lot of the poisonous lies that have been spun by the media nonstop from the beginning of this weekend, completely distorting the reality of what took place and sensationalizing and obscuring the police's role in the demonstration and the vandalism that took place. Stay tuned, Radio Basics, CHRY.
Experienced an unprecedented and senseless attack by a group of criminals whose only cause is violence and vandalism.
There's a lot of police cars being torched
any
today.
Any more than one, any more than zero is just shocking.
Right.
Now, this car is on fire, and as Farah mentioned, Steph, and we're going to go to Dave Woodford in just a moment, she said there are no police around.
Sorry, Ann, say that again?
Farah said that there are no police around at this point.
That's right, and that's curious. They were just there in two rows deep.
Suggesting that the reason for a $1 billion police presence was precisely to stop such groups, when the time came, the police were nowhere to be seen. So far, there have been no reports of people being hurt by the Black Bloc. The same cannot be said about the Toronto police.
Well, there again, another one that could be the parts of the car that are going up.
The images on CNN and a lot of local television with what happened yesterday, and there were images of police officers hitting and kicking demonstrators. And I have to say, one of our own journalists was punched in the face, and we had
the persons responsible will be held accountable. We know many of the members of these groups. Over the past several days, we have apprehended many of their leaders. Tonight, we began removing members of the mob.
And you were just listening to some sound clips from the massive demonstrations that were held this weekend against the G20 and G8. The G20, of course, held at the Metro Toronto Convention Center this weekend. I actually forgot to introduce myself. My name's Kabir. We're here at Radio Basics. I'm in the studio with Steve.
What's up, Tarun?
And Noman, who is an activist, journalist, and cartoonist for Basics Community Newsletter, as well as a UFT student. So you heard the sound clips. You know, if you've turned on your computer or TV at all within the past 48 hours, you'll have, you know, heard the sensational coverage about the supposed violence that came out of these protests, smashed and torched police cars, broken windows, etc. What you probably didn't hear too much about was the actual physical violence that was enacted on the people of Toronto this weekend by the real thugs, the 19,000 police and RCMP officers. Tear gas, clubs, rubber bullets, flash grenades, and with a slew of illegal tactics, these armed officers violently attacked the peaceful protests throughout the weekend, sending a number of people to hospital. In addition, over 900 have been arrested in connection with the mobilization for the G20. This included raids on people's homes. They raided the U of T Graduate Students Union office early yesterday. There was a number of raids leading up to the G20 and G8 on supposed anarchist organizations throughout southern Ontario. And around 600 people remain languishing in horrible conditions in a makeshift detention center on Eastern Avenue in downtown Toronto. They've been subjected to, as I said, terrible conditions, and in fact, basic human rights and legal rights have been violated as part of their containment. Human rights organizations, supposedly, well-respected human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, have come out calling for a full independent investigation into the police tactics that were used this weekend. And support rallies for those arrested have been violently dispersed and confronted by police, including one that was held just a few hours ago outside of Toronto Police Headquarters. Meanwhile, you know, with all of this confusion, the real criminals this weekend, the leaders of the G20 and G8 nations have all left the city after, you know, justifying and passing a new round of attacks on working people and, you know, the masses in the global south. So that's just a brief kind of summary of how this weekend has taken place. A lot of that you would not have got at all from, listening to any of the major corporate media stations on the radio or on television. A lot of this is exclusive information being brought to you by Basics Radio and Basics Community Newsletter. To start off this hour-long coverage of G20, G8, we're going to be having on, or we have in the studio, Basics Special Correspondent, Noman Ali. Noman, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Kabir. Thanks for having me.
For sure. So you were out there on Saturday. You were present at the rally that started about 1 p.m. At Queen's Park and basically did a circle throughout downtown Toronto. And there was... Can you kind of briefly give us a summary, a timeline of that demonstration, from, you know, these images that have been reproduced countless times on the media of, you know, burning police cars, broken windows, etc., and then subsequent to that, the violent and brutal police response to the demonstrators, leading up to, you know, the current state of things, where we have up to 600 people being held in detention, and human rights organizations and community organizations crying out in response to this, claiming, you know, abuse of human rights, neglect of the very basic legal rights. In response to these demonstrations.
Sure thing. So basically what happens on Saturday is that you have anywhere from 10 to 25,000 people gathered up in Queen's Park, labor unions, community activists, all kinds of people protesting the G8 and the G20, trying to make their voices heard about all of these things. So the march goes down University Avenue to Queen Street, goes west on Queen Street, and it's at Spadina and Queen that... effectively, a lot of protesters actually stopped and they said, you know, what we want to do is we want to march down to the fence. Mm-hmm. And the reasoning behind this was that, look, this is our city. These are people who love the city of Toronto. These are people who work here, who organize in communities in the city of Toronto, and this is our city. We don't want to see it being a fortress and stuff like that.
Exactly. And I believe, you know, like the whole, was there right? I mean, the fence itself was erected to prevent people, you know, from going no further than the fence. There's no reason why they wouldn't be able to march right up to the fence. I believe it was like a 4-mile radius, right, from where the actual thing was, with actual G20 meeting was taking place.
That's exactly it. So the idea was, why not just let us go up to the fence, right? And let's take back the city of Toronto, so on and so forth. And so it's been done. In Queen, there was a bit of a confrontation with police as people tried to push down, and they did a little bit down to Richmond Street. That's when the main march of labor and so forth went on its way up Spadina and back on College to Queen's Park. But there was a breakaway group, quite a significantly large breakaway group of, you know, maybe 1,000, maybe more people, that decided that they were going to stay on the streets, not going to follow this prescribed march, and they're going to go back and reclaim the streets. Now, the way the mainstream media has made it out to be is that all of these protesters were simply violent black bloc tacticians, or whatever they're calling it these days, who were hell-bent on the destruction of property, but that's actually not the case. A lot of these people are citizens of Toronto who had no interest whatsoever in property damage, who were interested simply in reclaiming the city for the people of Toronto. And so they continued east on Queen. And it's at this point that, for whatever reason, the Toronto Police Services and the RCMP basically abandoned the city of Toronto, right? This is really interesting. They've shown images of these cop cars burning on Spadina and Queen. When we passed the cop cars on Spadina and Queen, they were not burning. They were not on fire, right? This was about 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. They were smashed, that's for sure. But there were no cops to be seen.
In fact, I was at that point at the Spadina and Queen when the cops abandoned their cars. And this is basically how the scene played out. After one, I believe a cop car had been attacked, or somebody had smashed a window of a cop car, a series of riot cops and other police on bikes quickly, within a few minutes, reinforced the lines around their cop car. And there must have been at least 100, if not maybe 200 riot cops around the two cop cars that were stationed in the middle of Queen Street, just west, east of Spadina. Now, you know, as they surrounded their cop cars and held a circle line around their cars, you know, protesters, onlookers, you know, people on the streets, regular civilians, were just kind of onlookers standing around wondering what was going to happen next. And then the police just spontaneously retreated and completely abandoned their vehicles.
Without any reason. I mean, it was not like they were receiving any threat from the crowd, or there's any, you know,
no, they just completely left. Yeah. And for a good 10-15 minutes, people really didn't know what to do, because I think a lot of people were feeling like, wow, they just abandoned their cop cars. So, you know, there was a broken window of one, they were completely open, you know, all the stuff inside the cop car was available for anybody to come and you know smash or grab or anything. So I think people were expecting that the police were going to counterattack as soon as they had a pretext, so as soon as people started trashing the cars. And people acted, in fact, with incredible restraint. And there were a number of individuals who came along eventually and began kicking the windows and smashing the cars. And by that time, I had left sometime around that point. And I believe at some point later, the cars were eventually torched.
That happened much later. For, you know, when I passed by the cars, it was around 3:14. That's I have a picture of a car that was smashed. When you guys saw the cops surround the cop cars, that was a bit later after that. I went back to the scene at about 6. That's when I heard that there was a car torched at Spadina and Queen. So nearly 3 hours, the cops, you know, had the opportunity to remove those cars from the scene or to protect those cars or to do something with those cars. And they chose not to.
No, they abandoned their property, and it seems to me like this whole thing was staged. Now, there is this question, I think, that really important to raise, that we know that there were hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of undercover cops throughout the rallies, because we saw, and I saw personally, people being attacked with pepper spray, beat up by, you know, plainclothes police officers appearing out of nowhere, unidentified, not naming themselves.
Even officers that we recognize.
Yeah,
incidentally, that were dressed in plain clothes.
That's right. An officer came up to you, Kabir, and you know, wished you a well day, and asked how you were doing, and you didn't even. It took you half an hour to realize he was a cop. Right. So the fact that we know for sure that there was tons of undercover police officers, and we know that historically, and there's a bit of evidence to suggest that there were perhaps agent provocateurs in the crowd inciting violence. We know from the Montebello summits, which was another type of summit that happened in 2007 in Quebec, we know that provocateurs were caught inciting violence, and there was documentary and forensic evidence to suggest as much, and led to a huge scandal in Quebec around the Sûreté de Québec, you know, infiltrating the movement and inciting violence within the movement. Yeah, so I mean, we can't rule out that that was necessary, that that may as well have been playing out over the last couple of days.
That's totally possible. Yeah. But you know, let's say for the sake of argument that there were absolutely no provocateurs. For the sake of argument, we're definitely sure that there were. But for the sake of argument, if there were none, it's nevertheless true that the police basically abandoned the streets of Toronto.
That's right.
They could have at any moment. You know, we saw when we continued throughout the city. Tons of cops sitting in these giant buses, and they could go anywhere they wanted to easily, mounted police anywhere, and they were going everywhere whenever they wanted to. And they chose not to, right? So when the march moved eastward on Queen, the breakaway march, there were no cops to be seen until the breakaway march got to Bay, and then marched south on Bay right up to King Street. And that's, even then there were really no cops. That's when they kind of started showing up. That's where another couple of cop cars were torched, was on Bay and King. That's when I got separated from the breakaway march, because the cops cut us off at Bay and Adelaide. So what happens then is apparently the forward part of the breakaway march, with the Black Bloc and all those folks, they start running up Yonge Street and smashing everything on Yonge Street. Again, the cops had the opportunity to stop the Black Bloc. Right,
and which seems completely. I think, in fact, there was a German reporter on CBC or something else that was even pointing to how ridiculous that was. That Yonge Street, you know, known as like you know whatever financial center of Toronto, the Eaton Centre, right? There was no kind of protection, or there was no. And I mean, it doesn't seem possible that I mean I don't even think we mentioned this in the introduction, but I'm sure this is a well circulated figure that the $1 billion spent on security. And obviously there was a plan laid out for, you know, what the response would be that they didn't take that into account.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think to drive the point home before we go to commercial break, the point that we're making here is not that the cops didn't do their job good enough or that they failed to do their job. The fact is that they wanted to see a situation that would justify this massive security spending.
For sure.
And as we're going to talk about later and all throughout the show, much more happened at this protest, at these demonstrations. And in fact, much more needs to be discussed around what actually was passed and discussed at the G8 summit itself that is being overshadowed by three burning cars and a couple broken Starbucks and bank windows, right? That has dominated the scenes and the media for the last couple of days. We're going to come back here on Radio Basics with Tyler Kendall, an organizer with the Esplanade Community Organization who spent a day and a half in the detention center. He's going to describe the conditions in the center. And Noman Ali here with us in the studio is going to be telling us about the massive arrest that led to Tyler and hundreds of others being arrested outside the Novotel Hotel. Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5. We'll be back.
You're tuned back, Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. We're here doing a full hour of coverage on the G20 demonstrations. And on the phone right now, I believe we have Tyler Kendall on.
Yes.
And he's a member of the Esplanade Community Organization. A member of the Esplanade Community Organization and was, in fact, arrested during the process of these demonstrations, was held for a period of time in the Eastern Avenue, makeshift detention center. It was actually an old film studio that was converted into, a makeshift prison for the anticipated arrest during these demonstrations. And he's going to be talking to us a little bit about the terrible conditions that are present in that detention center the treatment that he sustained as a result of the Toronto Police Force. Tyler, thanks so much for coming on today.
No problem. I guess you guys were asked for questions, or do you guys want me to just explain what happened?
Sure, maybe can you just explain to listeners what happened while you were arrested? First off, start like why you were arrested how you were brought into that detention center.
We actually started a peaceful protest outside the Novotel Hotel. We had, I guess you could say, about 100 or more protesters. We were stopped by four police officers as we were trying to march towards
the Esplanade. This was on Saturday night, right? Like after all these events had taken place, this was like in the evening of that Saturday.
Yes, I think, I believe it was like 9-10 o'clock at night, no later. And we were stopped by four officers, and everybody sat down, and we had one representative go up, and she asked if we could leave. The cops told us no. And as we got up to try and turn around, we noticed the riot police coming around the back. And as they were coming around the back and swooping in more protesters, they started open firing, I believe, rubber bullets or the mace balls. They just started shooting into the crowd. And then they boxed us in, and they kept telling us to disperse, but we were boxed in from both sides. And then when we asked to leave, they would advance forward. And it was more or less like the Predator, kind of, because they would open up the line and reach in and grab one protester, bring them in, and then start beating them. And then they would move forward more so that you couldn't get to the guy that was being beaten. And actually, one case, there was a female that was down on her knees with her head down and her fingers up. And one of the riot officers ran up and kicked her in their face several times. And I believe after I was arrested, I talked to the paramedic. They said a couple bones in her face were broken, and she was at Sunnybrook Hospital. I'd actually like to get in contact with her if she's listening, because that was pretty bad. He kicked her several times in the face. But as they were hurting us like animals, they crammed us up against the hotel walls, and they kept targeting. They were targeting leaders, and I guess they thought were the protest or whatever reason they had. They were taking us one by one. And then it got to the point where they circled us up against the wall, and they told us, "You are being arrested for not keeping the peace," which made no sense. We pleaded with them, begged with them, to ask them to let us go. Deaf ears, nobody moved. It took about 6 hours for them to do one by one, and they processed us one by one. Mm-hmm. Then they handcuffed us. Well, actually not handcuffed so much as twist-tied us. They didn't ask us no questions. No rights were read to us. All they said was, "You are under arrest," and then they would take all the stuff out of our pockets, put it in our property bag, ask us our name, our address, took a picture of us, and then shoved us along to the paddy wagon. Mm-hmm. No reason of why arrested, no rights were read. There was no communication at all. Like, none of us knew what was going on, almost like being kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And then we were in the paddy wagon for several hours before we were in the detention center. We were parked after we finally got there. Then they allowed us to come in. No, once again, no processing, no nothing. They just took off the handcuffs, put back on the twist ties, and shoved us in the cages. The cages looked more or less like animal cages, like when you go to the pen and you see dogs in the cages with the little square, you know, mesh-looking cages.
Crisscross bars, yeah.
Yeah, crisscross bars. And there was, like, I don't know, 30 to 40 people to tiny little cells. There was one porta-potty with no door on it. There was one bench that could fit five people. The rest were all on the floor. Some cells were so packed that people could not physically sit down because there was that many people in it.
How long were you kept in the cell for?
I was in the first cell all of a half an hour, and then we demanded water, and it fell on deaf ears. So we all banded together and got everybody to, you know, chant, "Water, water, water." They finally gave us water, but I guess as a result of me starting it, I was targeted. And then as I got my water and my sandwich, before I could even eat my sandwich, they ran in, grabbed me, gave me a couple shots, dragged me to solitary, and just threw me on my face and left me in a 6x6 cell for about 6 hours on the floor. And they told me, I guess, because I was the ringleader, they were going on about, "You want to start your activist stuff in here, you can do it by yourself," kind of stuff. Just being real bullies, you know what I mean? Smacking me around.
From other prisoners, like the first cell you described, that you know, being kept with other prisoners in those kind of conditions, some people were held there for up to like 35 hours without or with a single meal.
Yeah, there was actually, after I was done with the solitation, they put me with another one. There was a gentleman in there, he was in there for 36 hours on top of me just starting my hours, and he wasn't getting released. Some people were vegan, some people couldn't digest the food because they're diabetic or whatever reason. We're in there for 18 to 15 hours without eating. You know what I mean? It got to the point where one guy, I had to beg the correctional officer, and I got everybody to chant. They actually gave him two apples. It was his first meal in 15 hours. It was two apples.
In fact, there was even the case of one. There was one blind individual who was arrested during all of this and wasn't even given right to, like, an American Sign Language, someone who could communicate with them properly, you know?
Yeah, that was the disgusting part. There was actually a case of one guy I met while I was in there. I think he's going to be blind in one eye now because the police officers, when they arrested him and he was on the ground, walked by and kicked him in the face, and he was in there with a patch. But they didn't have him away from the general population, which you would think because he has a physical injury. He was in the cells with all of us with just a patch on his eye.
Aside from all these conditions, Tyler, did they give you access to lawyers? Did they give you...
They did not let us know the time. They would not let us talk to lawyers. They would not allow us to have phone calls. We were not processed. We had no idea what was going on. Almost like they would walk by and taunt us and shake the cages and things like that. But every time we'd ask them what's going on, what's the charge, who are you with, what's going on, they were just deaf ears. No, there was no communication at all.
So in the end, what process were people released? Like, how was it just random?
It seemed random, I believe. They said they were slowly processed, but they would just come one by one, and they wouldn't even call your name. They gave us numbers, so they'd walk by and call your number, and if you didn't know your number, then, you know, they'd walk by you and you get bumped to the bottom of the list. Mm. And as soon as they call your number, they would grab you, drag you to another cell, you'd wait there for a little bit, then all of a sudden they would just give you your property bag, wouldn't say two words to you, told you if you start protesting again, you will be charged severely, more severely than now, and then walk us to the spinning gates and let us go.
So the condition of your release was that you wouldn't be able to participate in any further G20 actions?
Yeah, well, that further action would be taken upon, you know, arrest. So I believe if we were protesting and we got, I don't know, got caught protesting again. Like, if I was downtown, I'd probably be charged with some made-up thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Still going to court. There's also people that were sick in there. I remember seeing an old guy who needed heart pills, and they did not give him his medicine at all. He said he was been in there for 20 hours without a single medicine. I've seen people that were physically disabled beaten up because they didn't understand the police were talking to them, and their faces were just mashed. And, you know, people with mental health in there, same problem, just beat up because they couldn't understand what was going on. Just like the deaf guy that got booked on Friday.
For sure. So from what you understand, can you give listeners an idea of what the condition, like how many people remain in the detention center right now? And what if any actions are being taken place to, you know, expose this this terrible reality and you know, launch any kind of case against, you know, the Toronto Police Force for the actions that took place during this period of time?
Well, actually, the opposite's been going on. They haven't really been doing much to get people to come out of the cells. It seems like they wanted to keep people in. And even right now, I guess there's probably still 800 to 900 people still in there. They said that there was only 800 to 900 people in there, but that's a full-on lie because I know that easily in half the cell block there was that many. I believe that to expose what's going on, the media is doing a pretty good job as to making it seem like we are going out of the way to make it seem worse than it is. Even as I'm watching Pulse, the guy's saying, oh, well, supposedly this happened. And, you know, just the way the whole condescendingness of it, it seems like they're not taking it as bad as it was. You need to be in there to see what it is. Like, the floors are dirty. There was actually a case where I walked by and one of the cells had a leak from the ceiling and it was raining. And it had like 30 people in one cell and a couple guys were just sitting there getting dropped on their head. Like the water was dropping on their head as they're sitting on the floor in the cell. So it seems like the media is going out of their way to say, you know, everything was taken care of. It's over-dramatized. You know, it wasn't really that bad. But somebody that was there first-hand experience, I know how bad it was. It wasn't a pleasant time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for coming on today and, you know, letting us know what you went through as part of this. You know, you're part of the Esplanade Community organization, so we know that these kind of tactics by the Toronto Police are not at all new. And, in fact, this way of interacting with people is the way they interact with, you know, racialized people, you know, marginalized people in the city on a daily basis. But that they would do this on this scale and, you know, in you know, when the world eyes are supposedly watching Toronto, I mean, it shows you the amount to which the media and the police are, you know, coarse with each other, that this entire thing can just be swept under the rug. And when it is uncovered, mm-hmm. when people do talk about it, there's not even any kind of real concern to it. They're still worried about the burned police cars, you know? So...
Well, it's not even that they were saying to burn police cars. A lot, 95% of the people that I was in the jail cells with were there because they were walking downtown with a black T-shirt on.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were arrested. I remember that I was talking with a reporter who said he saw a woman wearing a black hijab and she was being arrested because she thought they were part of it.
No, no. What I meant was the media's only concern seems to be concerned with the burn police cars as opposed to this flagrant violation of you know, human rights. But definitely, thank you so much for coming on, Tyler. And we'll definitely keep you know, basics in general, keep updated on this situation.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
For sure.
That was Tyler Kendall of the Esplanade Community Organization speaking to us about his experience over the last 2 days in the detention center on Eastern Avenue in downtown Toronto.
Definitely. So in the studio right now, we have artist Progress. Actually, I heard him on Saturday Morning Live, which is, of course, a very, you know, a friendly show to Radio Basics, done by Norman Otis Richmond. And he was, in fact, interviewed by friend of the show, someone who's been on a number of times, Chris Harris Wasan.
Yes.
We're actually going to play his G20 track a little bit later in the show. Uh-huh. But Progress, you were at the demonstrations on Saturday. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your own, and in fact, you were at the demonstrations the entire weekend. Can you tell us a little bit about your own experiences, what you saw, and you know, relate to us a little bit about you know, your feelings on this on this weekend and what took place?
Most definitely. I was actually there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I was one of the people boxed in at Queen and Spadina yesterday and left in the rain for about 4 hours. Friday, I was part of the protest that went from Queens Park to Allen Gardens. Mm-hmm. And Saturday, I was on Queen Street and then down to Bay and King with about 10,000 people. I mean, I think we've heard a lot of different people's stories, individual accounts of what happened. But I came here more to offer sort of an overview. I think that this weekend we really saw the establishment show us their true nature, show us their true face. And for those of us who mm-hmm. who were tricked into believing that they were free before this weekend, now know the truth that we live in a country full of slaves and we live in a world full of slaves. And we've seen evidence of that this weekend. We've seen how quick the city could turn into a police state, which means realistically it's always a police state if it can turn yeah. into a police state that quick. And I mean, that's what's been going on, and it's continuing to go on right now. Our rights have been swept from us indefinitely, and we have no idea when that's going to be overturned. So what that basically means is, though, no matter where you are right now in the city, mm-hmm. no matter what you're doing, you can be detained and arrested without any questions. You can be put in prison without any questions, as the man that was just on was saying. So, I mean, for me, it wasn't so much a wake-up call as it was a manifestation of what I already believed.
A reconfirmation of.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sure. Well, brother, you put that not just poetically, but profoundly and precisely, because, you know, I mean, I was at some of these protests as well, and I heard yeah. people chanting sometimes that, you know, this is what democracy looks like, referring to themselves, yeah. and then this is what a police state looks like, referring to the cops. And yeah. to me, it was just like, I think those two are pretty much the same thing. Like, it was democracy that passed those secret laws in the Ontario exactly. legislature exactly. that created the police state-like situation in downtown Toronto. Yeah. It's democracy that can declare a riot act and sweep away all our rights. It's a democracy. In fact, it's every liberal democracy in the world that has that little constitutional clause that says, as soon as democracy is no longer convenient for us, we can actually just give
suspend the constitution.
Exactly. Suspend it and establish military and police rule.
Exactly. And when it comes to the day to vote, we're talking about three choices who are relatively the same. We have very, 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 yeah. like, there's almost no differences in terms of policy. And we call it democracy. But, I mean, at the end of the day, when we're given our choices, it's not democracy.
Exactly.
It's choosing what you consider to be the less of three evils. All of whom are controlled by the same people, all of whom answer to the same people, and that never changes. Popular politics is basically just a masquerade show to keep your attention, same as popular media, materialism, pursuit of capital gain. All these things are to hold your attention while they steal our freedom and they exploit us and turn us into batteries. And when we go out on the street and try to claim back our freedom and try to just resist, we see people thrown in cages like animals, like it was a concentration camp, mm-hmm. You know, like the Holocaust or something. And you know, it doesn't surprise some of us, but I'm glad that a lot of people that were sleeping have now woken up. And, you know, I'm definitely going to be on the front lines trying to do something about this continuously.
For sure. I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about, like, it's more what was surprising and kind of, or not surprising, but what's to be noted about the weekend was the capacity of the state to mobilize on this level in response to what is a relatively, like, completely insignificant. Like, this wasn't any kind of large threat that was posed by the people.
This is not Greece, right? This is not Nepal. This is not Venezuela.
Like, you know, Toronto during the Rodney King's supposed riots or the Rodney King rebellion back in 91.
This is not youth throughout the city were organizing
opposed to police.
This is not Days of Action, you know.
But and yet the state mobilized to this level and this level of violence to oppose it. I mean, it shows you the level to which they're willing to go. Imagine when, you know, the population of the city is at a stage where they pose an even greater threat to the system.
And that's something we're going to be taking up later in the show. We're going to be having Professor Greg Albo from here on New York University. He's going to be talking about the implications of the policies that were discussed and agreed upon at the G20 and G8 summits, which are going to mean basically a generalization of the austerity measures, the cutbacks, the attacks on the working class that we're seeing in Europe, that we've been seeing all throughout the third world for 30, 40 years, and what has been called, structural adjustment programs. Yeah. Basically, these are going to be generalized to every country in the world. Greg Albo is going to be talking about that. But to just to link it back to what we're talking about right here, is that I think the state is preemptively arming itself and justifying increasing militarization and police state measures so that when things actually start to pop off, when people start to realize that the days of collaboration between, you know, big capital and the working class, that those are behind us and that we're in a different era of crisis right now. And
I totally agree. Right? I think a lot of precedents were set this weekend that are going to be built upon. And in a lot of ways, this weekend was more a test run for them.
For real.
In a way to practice what's going to happen when the real...
It's a staging ground for fascism or counter-revolution.
The police got a few new toys, you know, to use. Their sound cannons that can, you know, leave you with permanent damage that they were, again, the Constitution legally allowed to use.
Yeah. The sweep of the rights.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and Progress, you got a track for us, bro. We got to move to commercial. So let's play this track and move on to the rest of the show.
It's actually a dub plate done on a beat that's been used a few times. I thought it was fitting for the situation. It's called Bun Down G20, and just take it in.
No idea is original. The plan is many centuries old. The only difference is the way it was sold. What you put your brain power on? Material glamour and large paper. Global elites coming to rape you. No idea is original. The plan is many centuries old. Only difference is the way it was sold. What you put your brain power on? Material glamour and large paper. Global elites coming to rape you.
I'm in a G20 police state, but in a peace state of mind. Wait, bump that, cause I'm trying to eat a plate of swine. And not the animal, I mean the two-legged kind. That's waving batons, beating the bodies, enslaving the minds. The elite's most anticipated design is here. One planet aligned in fear. From Czechoslovakia, Botswana to Latvia, Argentina, Korea, India, back to Austria. Big brother's been watching us, more like stalking us. Trying to stick that psychological cock in us. This is conversion of the populace. This is taking civilization and trying to make a stock of us. I got a message for the G20. You could never in your life take the minds of my seeds from me. We playing fool because we know we can't eat money. Spit on the ground every time we see police coming. 10,000 pigs, a tough act to follow. But we represent the 4 million people of Toronto. We represent the 6 billion people on the globe. And we can all decide to collectively say no to the end of the yen, the dollar and peso. Because when one world currency comes, it's case closed. They can make guns, but they can't create soul. Resist through this real hip-hop and rock and roll. Resist through these clenched up fists that throw stones and hope to leave a dirty pig with a broke nose. See the ruling class, that's 1% of all people, and they have the nerve to tell us all men are all equal. I stare into the face of these clowns, they all see through. And when the revolution comes, I'ma keep heat too. These streets move out of simple mathematics. Uprise and rise, tell them we won't have it.
No idea is original, the plan is many centuries old. The only difference is the way it was sold. What you put your brain power on? Material glamour and large paper. Global elites coming to rape you. No idea is original. The plan is many centuries old. Only difference is the way it was sold. What you put your brain power on? Material glamour and large paper. Global elites coming to rape you. Yeah, you already know. Progress. We know the revolution won't be televised unless we do the filming.
We welcome these clowns to our city. Once again, our city. So when we resist, we understand who runs this shit. They fear us. We don't fear them. You see that earthquake today? That wasn't no earthquake. That was us mobilizing. That was us forming. You see it?
Hi, I'm Jennifer Foster, and you're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
So throughout this entire weekend, when, you know, in the media we've been seeing these images, these sensationalized images of the so-called violence being perpetrated by the protesters, talking about, you know, this is not our city, et cetera, all of this has really overshadowed the actual, you know, international crimes that took place this weekend behind the closed doors of the Metro Toronto Convention Center, and of course on Thursday and Friday up in, you know, Muskoka at the G8 meeting. And the real criminals disappeared. We're not talking about, you know, the black mask anarchists. We're talking about the leaders of the G8 and G20 nations that were here and passed a new round of laws and policies to further degradate the masses of the world, whether that's in the global south and of course the working people right here within these G20 and G8 nations. So we have Greg Albo on the line right now. He's a well-known activist, writer, professor. He's a professor right here at York University, well-known throughout the city. He's going to be talking to us a little bit about the actual policies that were put in place. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for coming on today.
Hi there.
So, Greg, maybe you can tell us in a nutshell, what policies were passed this weekend? What was agreed upon? What came out of the G20 summit?
Well, this is the meeting of the major capitalist countries, moving from the core capitalist countries of Europe, North America, and Japan, and adding a range of the important emerging economies such as Brazil, China, India, and so on. And there was a number of things that are very important. Initially, the first is the general agreement to make the G20 the main forum for international economic cooperation, which has been unfolding over the last few years from the initial Washington and Pittsburgh summits of a year and 2 years ago. And through the international agencies such as the IMF in particular, but also partly through the OECD and the World Bank, have been putting greater emphasis on the G20 for economic coordination. So that itself is a fairly important development for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's important because the advanced capitalist core that had dominated the G8 or G7 and then added Russia to the G8 has been incorporating different countries of the South within this, within their particular framework for the development of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're doing it in a way that is bringing on board the key emerging countries. And that has a couple of dimensions to it. First of all, it's dealing with key countries in different parts of the world. So obviously in the what used to be called the transitional economies of Eastern Europe out of authoritarian communism, such as Russia, is a key anchor to that strategy in the East. It includes some of the social democratic countries of the South, such as Brazil and Argentina, for example, which have been key in the development of social democratic politics in the global South. And some of the countries that still have an authoritarian communist party, such as China, so they're through the coordinated mechanisms of the IMF and in particular the G20, they're extending the framework for capitalist accumulation as a whole on the world market. And then, secondly, as part of that, doing so within what we have largely been calling neoliberal globalization, that is a particular emphasis on the freedom of movement of capital and traded goods and so on. That is probably the initial big thing. The second thing is a range of the points that were developed about moving from the rescue strategies of fiscal stimulus to deal with the financial crisis, which were the point of the gathering in Washington and then Pittsburgh, and moving to the austerity strategies that are being put in place across the capitalist world right now, particularly in Europe, but also have been are being implemented over the coming year in North America.
Mm-hmm. So what are the details around the new fiscal measures that are going to be taken?
They provide some general targets. Now, these are coordinated mechanisms across different states with a lot of different positions, and how they implement the general communiques by the G20 is quite variable.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, there's a difference. You can identify three or four different strategies within this framework. The main framework is a very neoliberal understanding of the moment and development of this crisis of moving towards austerity and deficit reduction, which was an agenda driven by Europe and then facilitated in an agreement by Canada. And essentially, it focuses on bringing deficit reduction down, in other words, the annual budgets of governments down by 2013, and then bringing what's called the debt-to-GDP ratio down by 2016. Essentially means a longer-term buildup of debt and a continual drive to bring down deficit restriction. That's the general framework, which essentially means three or four years of very sharp period of austerity, and from the IMF, but at least a decade of longer-term austerity. That's the general mm-hmm. framework. In Europe, it is very severe. That is, they're immediately moving into that framework, which has been the spark behind the general strikes in the Mediterranean countries, Greece, Portugal, Italy, Spain, but also some of the developments that have been occurring in and around the other peripheral parts of Europe, in Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, but also Ireland. The position in North America is a bit different. And it's harder to generalize. Canada largely fits within the same framework as Europe, although not as severe in terms of the deficit position. And the U.S. is in a very different position because it has been supplying effective demand, or the demand for trade goods and production from other parts of the world. So it's in a very different position that the whole world has still been dependent upon the U.S. acting as a consumer of last resort, mm-hmm. where they can export their products into the U.S. And that has been the reason why the U.S. was the most hesitant at this meeting to move radically in the direction of austerity quickly. They wanted a slower pace and a slower agenda because they want to begin moving away from being the consumer of last resort and want other countries of the world to move in that direction. This raises then the problem of Asia. Asia is in a different position on fiscal deficits, except for Japan, which has been running a very, very large fiscal deficit for a long time. But it does so on the basis of funding all its government deficits by its internal savings market. And all of East Asia has been running large surpluses in their traded goods. So they've been very dependent upon selling their goods into the U.S. for then maintaining largely internal surpluses between the corporate sector and the government sector. And so there's a big tension on how to deal with this problem. And the move to austerity of everybody at the same time raises big problems in terms of further deepening the financial crisis, and possibly entering into a second sharp downturn.
What do you mean by that exactly? Explain how the relationship between the financial crisis, the austerity measures, the overall economic crisis.
Yep. Well, we're now in the third phase of the crisis. The first was the general decline of the general liquidity problems and insolvency crisis of the banking sector, which then moved into a general worldwide contraction where we had negative world growth for the first time since the Great Depression, with very sharp recessions in North America, Europe, and setbacks in East Asia, and nothing to get out of that crisis. Now, the way these austerity packages work, They're demanding austerity from workers in the workplace, which has been the rollback in collective bargaining agreements. So trying to improve competitiveness positions to export more. The similar logic applies in terms of the government sector by cutting back demand there, taxes, cutting back wages there, also to attempt to improve competitiveness. It then becomes a problem of where all these different countries will be able to export their goods and where there'll be the conditions for growth if everybody's doing the same thing, that is cutting back domestic demand and then trying to export into the world market. It has been resolved, this dilemma, for a period of 20, 25 years by the U.S. acting as consumer of last resort. And that was a key component of the debt that implies had built up in the U.S. market and was a key aspect of the triggering of the crisis. So in a sense, the logic that's being set up through these austerity budgets is to reproduce the same problem that led to the financial crisis as a whole. Now, there's a couple of things that are very important to understand this in terms of the overall dynamic of the financial crisis and who's paying for the crisis.
Just to let you know, Greg, we have about maybe a minute and a half left. Yep.
So who's paying for the crisis then falls on workers in paid work in the private sector who are being forced to cut back on wages, pensions, etc. And similarly, in the public sector by the cuts on transfer programs to the poor and so on. So workers are being doubly hit to pay for the crisis through the cutbacks in the public sector and wages. And essentially what the G20 agreed to was to keep the banks and the financial sector freed from paying any of this off.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no agreement on any kind of crisis tax, any kind of financial transaction tax. Some of the countries are implementing them, but these are very small, and they're to pay for future crises, not the past crises.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially the key consensus that occurred in at the G20 meetings was to have workers and the poor pay for the crisis.
And as you quite analytically point out, these measures can really only exacerbate the crisis in the long run and reproduce it, right, on a larger scale.
I think right now they are going to, you can re-spark capital accumulation for the capitalists in some of the conditions that are being developed, but it'll be even tricky for them. But quite clearly, the only solution they have, even for the capitalists to get out of the crisis, is have the rest of us work harder and get less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key point to the crisis, to raise the rate of exploitation on the working classes.
Well, Greg Albo, thank you very much for being on the line with us tonight.
Yep. Take care.
All right. That was Professor Greg Albo, professor here at the York University in political economy. You should download our show tonight, listen to that again. There was a lot of information there. But there you have it. I mean, Albo explaining the inner contradictions that capitalism is producing and reproducing, and turning to elevating the exploitation of working class people, cutting spending, social spending at all levels, as we've seen play out in Europe in a really contracted way over the last few months. Now, Stephen Harper announcing in the G20 communique that this policy is going to be generalized across all the G20 countries, and I'm sure promoted all across the world.
Why, like when people ask why was there protests against the G20, why not be happy that Toronto is being showcased to the world? I mean, that's the G20.
Yeah, local businesses are going to make lots of money, right?
What came out of just reconfirmed that not only like these individuals representing the companies and the countries that are responsible for this crisis in the first place, that of course affected largely working people, meant layoffs, meant an increase in imperial activities and wars abroad. Now have decided that to pay for this crisis, that in the end was a crisis mostly for working people, people are going to have to pay for that, and the poor are going to have to pay for that.
And I think for all of us who are sitting at home, maybe watching the World Cup, catching a few games, but watching on the news, basically civil-like war situations, police state measures unfolding, as you may have been watching from CP24 or CBC, this is an attack on you. This is directed at you. This is directed at the majority of people in the GTA and in Toronto. These police state measures that have been taken, that are being implemented, all the fancy new toys that the Toronto police will retain in their arsenal, will be used against. And, in fact, police spokesperson Wendy Drummond has said that these weapons will be used in future demonstrations and mobilizations in Toronto. So I think that really says it all.
Progress, Nomad. Any last comments, last words?
I'd just like to say to anyone that's listening right now, especially if you were someone that wasn't out there this weekend, I just want to make it very clear that the real work starts right now, Monday. The real work starts when the propaganda machine stops discussing the events of this weekend, and everything goes back to what's supposedly normal. That's when the real work needs to start. So, you know, it's not too late to get involved. Please go out and join your local community organization, and you know, join the fight, please.
And just to talk about something real concrete, Noman is taking on some editorial work right now for Basics. He's putting together a special emergency issue of Basics, which we're going to be distributing hopefully in the thousands, up to 10,000 in the next coming days and weeks across the city. You can maybe tell us a little bit about that and how people can get involved, Noman.
Just send an email to basics.canada@gmail.com if you got anything to contribute, and we'll take a look and hopefully we'll get it out in the special bulletin. What's key to note here is that what you saw over the weekend was the ruling class scared of what the power of people in the streets can do. So just keep that in mind, that when we start organizing, when we start working with each other, the ruling class will get scared. They're gonna try to do as much as they can in terms of repression, but ultimately we are many, they are few, as the people on the streets were saying. They are rich because we're poor, and we can totally change that situation around if we organize. And so keep your eyes out for the special issue of Basics, which is going to hit the streets in the next couple of days.
We need a lot of people to help us distribute with that, you know, at TTC stations, in people's neighborhoods, at workplaces, in the busy streets, outside the malls. We really need people's help. So give us a shout. You know, you can call me right now if you're interested. 416-736-5656. We're here in the studio.
And, of course, www.basicsnews.ca.
Or basics.canada@gmail.com.
For sure. So, and I think we just, you know, finally the point to link this to is that, you know, when Progress talks about supposedly normal, if we think that this whole weekend was an anomaly and that the police tactics that were used were an anomaly, we just have to look at the way the state interacts with, you know, the most oppressed section of people right here in Toronto on a daily basis. When we look at Junior Manon, who was beaten to death by police, he wasn't at a demo. He wasn't doing anything the least bit threatening, but simply existing as a racialized body within the city, and was beaten to death by Toronto police just, you know, a few
for
months
trying
ago.
To run, right?
Just, you know, a few, literally, you know, a
blocks.
10-minute walk from where we're at right now. So that's what we need to connect this to. This kind of attack is going on a daily basis, and we need to organize against it in all its forms and expose and counter the lies that are being perpetrated by the corporate media. Basics Radio, CHRY 105.5. Kabir, Steve.
Progress, thanks for having me on, by the way, too.
And Noman.
Definitely. Thanks for coming on, both of you guys.
Radio Basics, we're out.
Tell the people what you're here for.
Bring everything out closer to the people.
Basics.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble.
An oppressed person will fight back.
Truth or fame.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Now we're in the third.